You're listening to BuddhistGeeks.com. April 2nd, 2007. Episode 13, Gimpo Roshi on Big Mind. In this episode, Gwynbo interviews Gimpo Roshi, a Western Zen teacher and lineage holder of both the Soto and Rinzai traditions. He is also the author of four books, as well as an upcoming release entitled Big Mind, Big Heart. In this podcast, Gimpo Roshi discusses Big Mind, his unique method of introducing practitioners to their true nature. We hope you enjoy this conversation with Gimpo Roshi, and be sure to share your thoughts, insights, and experiences in the comments section of the podcast post. If you're interested in sponsoring our podcast, please visit www.BuddhistGeeks.com/advertise.
I read your book yesterday.
You read the whole book yesterday?
Whole book.
What'd you think?
And I went through the process of Big Mind for the first time. Yeah, I think it's a really uplifting read, and it's really inspiring read.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'd love to, you know, hear a little bit more about kind of the process of writing for you and writing the book. Like, did it take a long time to write, or did it just sort of evolve over time? How did that happen?
All right. Well, absolutely it evolved over time. You know, I started doing the Big Mind work in June of 1999. And in fact, Ken Wilber had invited me and offered me a lot of money to write this book about 4 years ago. And I didn't want the pressure, because I needed to feel it came when it was ready to come. And I was in Hawaii, May and June, with my children. They're not kids anymore, but 20 and 24. But we were there together, and you know, they can kind of do their own thing and have a great time, and I had a lot of time on my hands. So within 10 days, I actually wrote the whole book. So it came out very quickly, and I did part of the book on my BlackBerry with my thumbs, just typing it out, and then I did the rest by telephone, where I called my editors, who also then transcribed the telephone calls, and the whole thing in 10 days, but now it's taken us 6 months of editing to get it ready as a book, but the actual writing was in Hawaii over 10 days.
Are you going to keep it right at 99 pages?
Yeah, well, you know, as the format for the book, I think it changes the number of pages, but I don't know exactly what it is, but it'll be around 200 pages. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very compact.
It is. And we actually, when I originally wrote the book, there was a lot more material, and we took and we divided that material, and we actually made two books out of it. The next one will come out, and we'll start working more on it once this one's printed. But I've got the material for the second book already, and that goes more into the development of spiritual practice, far more than the first book. So the first book is really for beginners and people who want to get acquainted with the Big Mind process. They could be long-time Zen students or not practicing at all. The second book will be for those who have read the first book or done some work, and they'll find it, I think, very interesting. And it'll go much more into the depths of Zen training.
So one of your hopes with the book is to maybe in some way change the trajectory of kind of the current political or environmental or world situation to make it better for future generations.
That's absolutely correct. And more than just environmentally and politically, but every way, you know, educationally. I think I was an educator. I started teaching school when I was 22, which obviously is a long time ago now. And I think that we need to be teaching our children how to get more in touch with who they really are. And as you know from the book and from the work, it's kind of obvious that within every one of us is all the wisdom that has ever been, and we just have to tap into it. And I think with our children, they're not taught how to do that. They're taught you know, the three R's. They're taught how to think on some kind of rational, some kind of dualistic level, but they're not really taught how to tap into the resources of their mind and what's potentially possible for them. So we want to affect that area too. So also political. We're in the armed forces. We're teaching Big Mind and Zen at the Air Force Academy. So there's a lot of areas that we want to affect with the work.
Ken Wilber, to get back to that for a moment, he said that he thinks that the Big Mind process is arguably the most important and original discovery in the last two centuries of Buddhism. That's quite a claim. So how has your relationship with Integral Institute informed your work, or would you say you teach or practice a sort of integral Buddhism?
Ken says that what I'm teaching is an integral Buddhism. I don't know if I've ever made that claim. Maybe it is. I think that Big Mind has become a very integral part of Integral. And Integral has become a very big part of Big Mind and my work. About a third of the population, wherever I am in the world, and teaching, seems to be people from Integral, which is a lot of people. If you get 100 people, some 30-plus people are from Integral, and that's no matter what part of the world I'm teaching in. So it seems to have really taken root in that practice. Of course, the other two-thirds are made up of Zen people and people off the street, people who have never done any spiritual practice. And it seems like what is so effective about the Big Mind is anyone can do it, and they don't need to have any background.
One of the people that experienced, can we say, a Kensho experience one time was a young guy that actually hadn't had any practice or formal Zen training. And he, you talk about him in the book, just spoke with such clarity, and this inspired you to...
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. I had met him before. He had been here a couple of times to the center. He had learned to sit, but he had no real background in Zen. He was actually a philosophy major at a local college here. And we were in this workshop. I don't remember how many people were there, probably around 60 people. And I asked, and I don't remember what voice I asked to speak to, if it was Big Mind or the Buddha, whatever it was. The clarity when he acknowledged who he was, the clarity that came out of that blew me away. And that's when I realized I had touched onto something or tapped into something that was pretty mind-blowing. And I began to really explore that. It took a while for it to evolve. It's still evolving, actually, after 8 years. But before I really knew what I had kind of walked into, and it all seems so obvious after doing it for 8 years, that why it works. Because what we know from Buddhism is we know that the more I am identified with something, the more I'm attached to it, the more it causes suffering. So I'm more identified to my car than I am to your car. I'm more attached to my children than I am to somebody else's children. I'm more attached to my wife than to somebody else's wife. And therefore, that creates more suffering. Not that the attachment is bad, just creates suffering. There's no good or bad about it. So with the Big Mind work, what we find is, as I start giving voice to these various aspects of the mind, which in Buddhism is called Abhidharma, all these voices or aspects are dharmas. And as I give voice to them, I become less and less identified with the self, and therefore less attached to the self. So therefore it's easier to drop the self because I'm less identified and attached to it. So when we sit, part of the big problem is we're so identified with the self, we're so attached to it, and we are sitting there to drop off body, mind, or to let go of the self, we can't do it. The self is clinging to itself and its own identification with it. As soon as we do this work, then we sit. It's so much easier to just let it go because we already have that distance from it, therefore less attachment to it. So that's one of the reasons it works.
And it's called... it's called voice dialogue.
No, it's not called voice dialogue. Voice dialogue is the work that I studied with Hal and Sidra Stone in 1983-84. And Hal and Sidra discovered voice dialogue. Hal was a Jungian analyst, and Sidra was a psychotherapist. And together, they came up with this technique called voice dialogue, which was based on Jungian work and Gestalt work. I then studied that with them for a year, worked on it for 16 years, and developed the big mind, which is not voice dialogue. I don't want to confuse it because it won't do voice dialogue justice. Voice dialogue has a completely different purpose. The purpose of voice dialogue is more of a psychologically becoming healthy. Big mind has that too, but it's more getting in touch with our true self, our true nature. So there's a different point to it. They never work with groups. It's always a one-on-one individual work. Whereas I work almost always with groups, although I do some individual work. And the goal is completely different. I did want to say something else. Yeah, I want to say, in speaking about why the big mind works so effectively, the other thing that is not very well known within Buddhism, because it's one does this at the end of one's study at Shiho time, transmission time, or at the end of koan study, if one does koan study, and that is what we get into, in particularly in the more esoteric Soto school, is what we call invoking the Buddhas and ancestors, meaning we bring them in. And when, let's say for myself, when I give transmission to someone, like I received the transmission in 1980, and I've given it now to over 20 people, this particular ceremony called Denkai, and the Shiho to about 10 people. Shiho is actual transmission, and Denkai is receiving the lineage so you can pass on the lineage. When we do that, what we do is we invoke the Buddha and become one with the Buddha by saying, by actually, I am the Buddha. I am the Buddha. So even within the Soto school, we do the same process, but it's not very well known. Not very many people know that because you have to be a successor to even realize that. So the big mind work is very much based in Buddhist principles. It's just that I discovered it can work for anyone. Up to now, it's only been for advanced students.
Is there a reason that you think it should be only reserved for advanced students? Is there any potential danger in, for example, dialoguing with these different sub-personalities and then finding, I'm not comfortable with this, or this is opening up something much larger?
Okay, I had that same concern, particularly when I first started. I've now shared the Big Mind process with probably tens of thousands of people, and maybe even more than that. And I haven't run into one incident of a problem, not one. And I think because we're all self-protect. In other words, just like you just said, if we get to a place that is too much for somebody, the protective mechanism comes in very nicely and protects the person. It's not like taking LSD or something like that where you have no control. The controller and protector are always accessible, always right there. And when they feel threatened in any way, they just come back in, and it's never been a problem, and I'm not worried about it.
This has been a presentation of BuddhistGeeks.com, copyright 2007. Music in this podcast provided by C for Chaos. For more great music and writing, visit his blog at www.cforchaos.com.